We're going to be talking about what it means to be a man in the midst of this series. And we did a series like this about 4 years ago. And boy, it was one of the best received ones we've done, including from women. So I don't think we're going to leave anybody in the lurch here. But just let me say a few ground rules as we go forward. One is this. I'm going to be talking to men the whole time. So I'm not going to caveat everything. I'm going to act as if we're all sitting around a campfire and talking to men. And I'm looking forward to that. If you're in here with a boyfriend or a husband, best thing for you to do is to never go like this. Never. In fact, if I want to encourage you to not even bring up in any discussions anything that we talk about today, honestly. Because if he's processing something through or something's going on, and then you start pushing him on it, he will shut down. He will shut, honestly. So don't. We're allowing you to listen into our private conversation. That's what we're doing today, honestly, and we will be this whole week. And we're not really interested in this, really about the differences between men and women. There's a lot of discussion about that. I don't really want to talk about that. There are some differences I think we would all agree with. We can see them. Should I tell you what they are? No, we don't need to do that. So we're not talking about differences between men and women. We're primarily looking at the difference between boys and men. And those differences are not based on age. There are 15-year-old men and there are 45-year-old boys. And the journey to manhood is one that we see the marks of all throughout the scriptures and all throughout many of our common experience. So before we go any further, let's pray right now. God, thank you so much for today. And for everyone who's here, and I pray that no matter who we are, we go forward when we grow, but specifically and especially I pray for those who are men. You take us to new places and help us to comprehend and apply. And I pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen. I was reading just in my normal time with God recently, part of the New Testament, in the book of 1 Corinthians. It said something that sort of jumped out at me. It was unusual in our culture. It said this: be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men. Be strong. Let all that you do be done in love. These attributes here are normally not what it means to be acting like a man. That's normally meaning being juvenile, immature, and scratching yourself. In fact, it's awesome that I'm reading a translation that actually says act like men. It's an aspirational thing. It doesn't say act like an adult. It doesn't say act like a well-rounded individual. It says act like a man. This should be something we should aspire to. It's a different category. And in the midst of this verse, there's hints of the five things that I've seen over and over again that are present in every man's life. Not the boy's life, the man's life. These five things are seen in the Bible. These five things I've seen in every man that I know and respect. In these five things, I've worked with my son to get him to become from a boy to a man. And we see them in the verse. It says to be watchful. What does watchful mean? It means you have a vision. We're going to see that men have a vision. It tells us to stand firm. What does standing firm mean? It means that you're standing because there's an avalanche of information, an avalanche of temptations coming against you that everybody else does, but you got to stand firm because you're in the minority. Men are in the minority. Act like men. Men. It's in the plural. Act like men. So this isn't just an individual journey. It's something where we need each other. We need teammates. Next one is to be strong. Let all that you do, all that you do. This is active. This is work. Men work. We like to work. It's important to us. And then finally, have it be done in love. Things that are done in love are for other people. And the man is a protector. Men are protector. We see these things throughout this verse and actually throughout the entire scriptures. I've seen more movies in the last 6 months than I have in probably any six-month period for a long time anyway, just because, not that I'm anti-movie, I just like to spend my money on other things. But I've seen a bunch of them recently. And one of the ones I saw recently, the most recent one, was the movie Noah. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but everyone dies at the end. I'm sorry to... They drowned, actually. I'm sorry to ruin. I just like to ruin movies for people, so there you go. No, actually, I think we all know the story of Noah, right? Flood comes, everyone dies, except Noah and his family. So actually, I'm going to talk a bit about this today. I'm not going to ruin the movie at all, honestly, with the things I say. I found it really, really interesting. And one of the things that I found the most interesting was the depiction of Noah. Now, there's a lot of things in the movie that are not right. 50% of the movie is conjecture. It's not really in the Bible. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not, but it's conjecture. It's reading between the lines. 25% of the movie is definitely not in the Bible. It definitely contradicts what the Bible says, such as Noah has three sons, only one of them's married. They're all married. About 25% is definitely outside the biblical record, and 25% I think is actually in line with it. And in the midst of it, I got a lot of stuff out of it. I enjoyed it. And one of the reasons that I liked it was the depiction of Noah. I liked it. I liked that they depicted an actual man, a man's man, as Noah. I grew up in church. I was forced to go to Sunday school. And boy, the image I had of Noah in my mind that I got from my female Sunday school teachers is not who the real Noah would have been. I mean, I saw Noah, Moses, they all looked the same. They both were emaciated old men with long beards that liked to pet bunny rabbits and kittens. And, you know, you go to a bookstore and find some children's picture Bible, and you'll see they're just like, And so, and I, part of how we talk about life, guys, and how we talk about even these people in the Bible, it so oftentimes isn't the way it really was. And I think this is one of the reasons why there's a crisis in masculinity in the American church. I mean, one of the places where there is just no men at all, percentage-wise, is in churches across the country. We just have a lot of dudes who have been brought up in, I don't know, just something that isn't masculine, something that isn't godly masculinity. If a man-eating lion walked into the average church, spent some time, he'd die of starvation. Wouldn't find anything to eat. Noah is a man throughout this. I like it. I like what I see in him. And let's take a look at his real life from the book of Genesis and see if you don't see it as well. Genesis 6, chapter 5 and following. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord regretted that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I've created from the face of the land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. So the creation that God has created has gone to such a bad place. There is such rebellion. Awful things happen. God says, I got to hit the reset button. This is actually beyond redemption. I got to crush this place right now. People have gone after their own things instead of going after me, and everything is a quagmire. Got to eliminate it. But I still like the idea of Earth. I still like the idea of the balance of the ecosystem. I still like the idea of human beings and everything. So I'm going to save a portion to hit the reset button. And Noah is the one who finds favor. Now, it doesn't say exactly why Noah finds favor, but the dude is different. And we see some things start to emerge from his life that I think were in his life, which were part of what caused God, I think, to be attracted to him. Five things. Number one, what does a man do? A man is about a vision where a boy lives day to day. Men have the ability to say, this is where my life is going, and this is what I want. Boys don't do that. They get up, and they hope their day treats them well. They get up, and if they got something they don't want to do, like take a test today or tomorrow, they don't want to study because they don't understand the connection between the test and getting ahead in life. And what they're boys are just all about, I want to feel good and do what I need to do right now. Where men say, I'm okay with doing some really difficult things because there's something I'm looking for. There's something I'm building towards. I see the whole coming together. It may not be you're going to invent the iPhone and some massive tech revolution is going to happen because of your vision for that, which, by the way, if you've read Steve Jobs' biography, he was a boy. It's not about having some sort of massive tech gadget or maybe earning $1 billion or something. That maybe it is starting a business or starting something that's going to employ people and earn you a living. Maybe the vision is, I don't know another man in my family that's made healthy choices. I don't know another man in my family that's married someone and stayed with the same woman their whole life. I don't know another man in my family who's actually gotten ahead financially and has done X, Y, Z. I'm going to be the first one that doesn't have an addiction to alcohol. I don't know what it is. You just got to figure out what is it that your life is going to be about that you're not going to be able to get done on a day in, day out basis. And Noah had this vision put before him by God. It says in Genesis 6:1, and God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. That's a good vision. Multiply. That's a good vision right there. Some of us would like to have that vision. Just go and you're going to repopulate the earth. It's not just repopulating the earth when the waters recede. It's actually creating this ark. I was watching a piece on a military vet that's lost his leg. And I don't know if he knew it or not, but he was quoting Mark Twain, but it meant much more that it was coming from him. And he said this, the two best days in a man's life are the day he's born and the day he finds out why. Why is it you're here? Are you working towards understanding why you're here? A phrase that's been coming up more and more in my research is masturbatory masculinity. You know, we know what masturbation is. Masturbatory masculinity is when there's quick little bursts that are not really the real thing that make us feel like men. Just like masturbation simulates sex, there's many activities that we do that simulate masculinity but aren't necessarily masculine. Maybe not bad, but just not the real thing. So why do we get all freaked out in sports and start talking trash and take it all personal? Because sports is our form of war, and I hope it stays that way. Let's keep wars at a minimum. But sports, we have this attitude because it's not really the real thing, but yet we act as if it's actual war. We go to the gym and air-conditioned environments where there isn't a speck of dust instead of actually ever doing physical manual labor. When's the last time you had dirt under your fingernails? When's the last time you had grease pressed into the ridges of your fingers? When's the last time you actually sweat to the core producing something instead of being inside? We have video games. Video games that are a form of heroism. You know, we did this or that, but it's just a one-dimensional thing. It's actually not real heroism. Social media. Social media is our form of interaction with people. It's our form of team. And there's nothing wrong with social media, video games, working out in the gym, nothing. It's just recognize that our society has more and more things that simulate what men have historically done, and we're just doing these cheap imitations. And that's okay until it gets into character stuff and it starts affecting our character. This is why we have things like the Tough Mudder that have become so popular, and I'd like to do Tough Mudder sometime. If you're not aware of it, it's this massive, like, run, obstacle course, go through mud, get zapped with electricity, and all kind of crazy. And you actually do it as a team. It's kind of cool. I'd like to do it sometime. And we see why it's so powerful according to the understanding of the chief creative officer of the Tough Mudder, who puts it this way. We don't really know if we're tough anymore. We don't have fist fights. We don't chop wood. Life has become convenient and easy. In a Tough Mudder, we get a lot of what we call the fight club male, the 25 to 40-year-old guy in a white-collar job who hasn't been scared, hasn't been wet and muddy, and wants to test himself to see what he's made of, to prove that even though he's 38 and has a roller bag and a door on his minivan that closes by itself, he still has this inner badass. It's this visceral sense of accomplishment that handing in the Q2 report doesn't give you. Some of the most manly men I know have minivans with automatic doors. This, unfortunately, is as far as the conversation normally goes. Like, what's manly? You know, you can have a truck and black primer. You can have a pink minivan with an automatic door. It doesn't make you a man one way or another. You can like the artwork of ink on your skin, or you can like the finger paint with watercolors. None of those things define you as a man or make us as a man, but don't we all realize there's something in us that's craving for the real thing, and our society is taking that away from us. The one through line that goes throughout these entire five things between boys and men is that boys are always passive. They let life happen to them. They're the victim. They hope someone does well by them, and men are aggressive. I thought about saying, maybe I should just say assertive. No, aggressive. Men are aggressive. They say, I want that to happen, so I'm going to make that happen. I'm going to force the issue. I'm going to exert myself. And we have a society that just gets freaked out about aggression. And so we see it in our boys, and I'm talking about our physiological boys, and we don't like that. My goodness, back in my day, you know, you start to get old when you start to say, back in my day, we had two recesses a day when I went to grade school. And we all went on recesses, and we threw things, and we hit things, and we sweated, and we came in, and we were muddy, and Mrs. Bash in second grade, or Mrs. Meisner, would had to work out a system to get the mud off our shoes, or we'd come in, and there'd be mud underneath our thing, and that was just the way it was. It's the way it was. My goodness, now, cut out recess. Not only cut out recess, if you go to the waterfront like my kids did in their school, you got to go in single file line with your hands behind your back, not saying a word. And what if someone gets out of line? What do we do? Let's put them on some drugs. Let's kind of take that out of them. I believe ADHD is real. I believe that chemical imbalances are absolutely real. I believe that there's times when God has blessed us with science and we ought to use science to adjust brain. I'm not against any of that, but I'm telling you what. 1 in 5 boys shouldn't be on ADHD medicine. 1 in 5, no, there's no way. We as a society are just threatened. We don't like seeing a male who's got energy. Let's tame him. That's just like, let's put that down. And this is having ramifications on our society. But I'm not here to talk about our society. I'm just here to talk about us, guys. We just have to be comfortable with doing some aggressive things versus what those who are passive want to have happen. The second mark of a man is a man works and a boy plays. Men work and boys play. I did a whole series a while ago on play. I believe in play. I have play in my life. There's nothing wrong with play. It's awesome. But boys are defined by play. They want to play. Men really embrace work. They embrace it. Because they realize that it's through the work that the vision can come. It's the work that the future can come into reality. And our society is becoming increasingly adverse to work. Not too long ago in USA Today, they had an article that stuck out to me. Sick from work? My grandma would laugh at you. It talks about the rising stress levels that we have around work. And the article said, what is the stress we're in? Shoot, my grandmother used to work in the factory during World War II, and yet we've got these massive, massive amounts of stress. We get so stressed, we're trying to figure out how to work less. No, we have the ability and capacity to work and exert ourselves intensely. In fact, we're way underexerted. In the book that I've been reading, Manthropology, it talks about how previous generation males exert themselves a way that we don't think that we could even do any longer. It talks about Nero's legions. When they were marching, they would march 2 marathons for one week straight in the midst of a raid. For 2 weeks straight, they marched 2 marathons a day. They marched 50 miles a day with a 100-pound pack on an average 145-pound frame with all of their gear and everything. They exert themselves. We have any sense of soreness, or there's something wrong, or something wrong where a title like the 4-hour work week is intriguing and you want to find out how to only work 4 hours. There's something wrong with that. There's something wrong when we're looking at other countries and fantasizing about, man, maybe we should just make it illegal to work more than 30 hours. Haven't we come beyond that at this point? I'm not against concepts and 4-hour work week. I'm not against working 30 hours. I don't know how many hours we're supposed to work. I don't. God doesn't say, thou shalt work 40. He doesn't say, thou shalt not work 20 or thou shalt not work 90 either. He's silent on that. He's very clear. There's one day where you're not to work. It's called the Sabbath. But outside of that, we're not really sure. But here's what I know. Boys are always figuring out how not to work. They're always figuring out, when can I retire? When can I stop? And men don't think that way. Even if we're not getting paid for it, we're thinking, how am I adding value and how am I going forward? Genesis 6:14-15 says, make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark, cover it inside and out with pitch. This is how you are to make it. This was a massive work project. One of the things in the movie that's definitely not in the Bible is there's these big stone creatures that were making the ark for Noah. maybe one of the reasons why the director had to put that in is he couldn't imagine a man would actually work hard enough to make an ark because he hasn't seen it. Movie critics aren't the kind of people who make arcs, I don't think. But nonetheless, Noah actually was working. He was working. I mean, can you imagine the difficult work he and his sons and perhaps the women in his family were pitched in as well, perhaps. Can you imagine the work? It's like, okay, here it is, God. Here it is, Noah. You're going to build an ark, save your family, repopulate the world, hit the whole thing, and this ark is going to be roughly the size of a football field. It's going to be multiple levels, and I haven't invented electricity or gasoline yet, so no chainsaws. You're going to have to chop down every single tree by hand. You're going to have to figure out how to drag them to where you want them to go. You're going to have to figure out how to strip them, how to center them up, how to plumb them, how to get them up 30 feet in the air for different things. You have to pit them. This is a massive, massive work project. We don't hear Noah going, oh, what about everyone else? How come they can't work? Like, oh, really? Okay, it's just what he does. He works. Men, we have to embrace a healthy work ethic and not be afraid of work. And we get this as well from Jesus, the ultimate man, who is also God himself, the ultimate man. He says in Matthew 17 that my Father is always working up at the present time, and I too am working. He works. This is what God does. He works. Anyone who wants to be like him, wants to be a man, works versus just wanting to play and get out of work, which is what a boy does. Number three, a man is a protector and a boy is a predator. Men protect, boys prey on others, and specifically those who are weaker or more vulnerable. The whole vision that Noah is working against is one of him being a protector of his family. God says to him this, I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall come into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. So his vision is like, man, I got to protect my family. I've got to create some system that keeps them from being eliminated. He's in protector mode versus predator mode. What does it mean, man, to be a protector? Well, if you're dating somebody right now, or when you do go out with somebody on a date, your sexual choices, are they governed by her future or by your pleasure? If you're asking her to do things that are pushing her to do that's about your pleasure versus thinking first, what will her future look like if I do or don't do something things? If your pleasure for you are a boy, I don't care how much money you make, I don't care how old you are, you're a boy. Men think about others and protect others. Some of the worst moments of my life is when I've thought about how I could have protected and I didn't. When I was a boy, a physiological boy, I don't know, 10 years old maybe, I was playing in this, you know, little football league, and at the end of practice, all the kids got picked up by their parents, and for some reason, my parents were late to pick me up, and it started to get dark, and there was four of us left. There was myself, Dale, Joey, and Chris, and for some real reason, Joey and Chris decided to start picking on Dale, and started with just calling him names and stuff, and then it moved to spitting on him, and then it moved to punching him. At one point, I remember he was on the back, and they were punching him in the back, and what did I do? Nothing. I was a boy. I was just happy they weren't messing with me. I was just sitting back, just kind of doing nothing. Now, why didn't I jump in? Well, maybe it's because Chris is my age, but he was bigger than me. Maybe it's because Joey wasn't my age, but he had an emotional edge on me because he was older than me, and all I'm saying is this. I look back and I have major, major regret because, man, if only I could go back in that moment and just get a bloody nose and just have tried to protect somebody, I wouldn't have had awful thoughts about that. Boys don't think of putting themselves in harm's way to protect somebody else. They're always looking for themselves where men aren't that way. We protect. One of the ways that I tangibly protect now is I just have to look out for my family. And I don't necessarily have to protect my 21-year-old son right now, but still, my daughters, I still have a sense of protection, especially my younger daughter, who's soon to turn 16. And I knew a long time ago that when I started having kids, I was going to have to be protecting my daughters. Why? Because I was a boy in high school, And I was only one thing I wanted all the time, and I would be relentless. And I work with a lot of students, and I just knew that this whole sexual temptation and boys take advantage of it was a massive, massive deal. So when my girls were little, I said, hey, you know, there's this thing called dating where a boy comes and picks you up in a car, and guess what? You're never going to do that. You got to start early on this. Like, you can't just spring that idea on them when they're 15. You got to start when they're 5. You're like, okay, daddy. Now, as I continue on with this, let me say this. There's things I might talk about in this series where you're going to go, oh, duh, I should have done that. What was I thinking of? Try not to do that, guys. Don't beat yourself up. Just say, where I am right now, where do I want to go from here? I find it fascinating. If some 16-year-old kid came over to our house and said, hey, I'm just going to take your car out, we'd say, you're not taking my car. Some 16-year-old kid came over and said, hey, I'm just going to use your skis. I'm going to take your skis. You're going to take my skis. Some 16-year-old kid came over and said, I'm just going to take your drays, your beatbox. I'm just going to go and I'm just going to, no, you're not. If someone comes over and says, I'm going to take your daughter by myself, who knows what's going to happen? You're going, oh, okay, well, take care of her. Have you never been 16 before, guys? My oldest daughter, first date, I had to talk with a guy. I don't remember all that what I said, but I know that I wanted to send a message. I actually took my shotgun and I placed it on the kitchen counter so when he came in, he would see it. Only half humorous, but nonetheless, it was something. And I do remember much more vividly my most recent one because my Mariah, and I asked her permission to say this. To tell the story and the guy she's been with is that she's been dating this kid, good guy, and one day he comes home, dating looks different, you know, the word dating I find doesn't even mean the same thing today as it did back then, but she's been hanging out, talking, whatever with this kid and I come home one day and she says, hey, Ben's coming down and he's gonna take me to a movie. Like, no, he's not. I said, Dad, what are you doing? Dad, Mom told me. She said it was okay. I said, I don't care what your mother said. This is between you and me. We've been clear on this for a long, long, long time. You can't corner me on this. We've been clear that, no, you're not going one-on-one in a car with another boy, especially when I haven't talked with him yet. We've shared some texting back and forth that we're going to have a conversation. I haven't had it yet, so no, you're not going, Dad, but he's coming, I can't. So I got a solution, here's the deal. When Ben comes down, he and I will go out. So, Dad, no, seriously, we've been talking about getting together, so when he comes down, he and I will go out and I'll have the talk with him. And she goes, Dad, oh, please, Dad. And my wife is upset about this. She can be a caver sometimes. Like, huh? And I'm like, no, we're going to. So Ben comes down. I said, hey, Ben, you're not going to be going out with Mariah today, but why don't you and I go out and have that talk that we were talking about? And Ben goes, okay. So I said, Ben, let's go out and get something to eat. Why don't you, and you drive. Why do I want him to drive? Because I want to see how he drives. I'm going to be in his minivan, or his parents' minivan, and we're going to go. So I'm watching how he drives, seeing how things are. We get to the Frisch's, and we get there, and I ordered decaf coffee. I said, you want anything? He says, no, my stomach is... come on, vanilla milkshake, something. He said, oh, I'll take milkshake. So I said, look, Ben, a couple things I want to cover with you. One, I mean, let's be honest, this is not going to last very long. I mean, this is if it does, great, but in all likelihood, this is not like a decades-long thing. So a couple things I want to cover. First is this, I need you to assure me that you're going to be a protector of my daughter's reputation. That no matter what happens or no matter what you say, that when she's not around, her reputation is always solid, that you will never do anything to hurt her reputation. He said, absolutely. I said, okay. Second thing, I want to talk about sexual intentions. What do you plan to do sexually with my daughter? And, you know, my daughter knows well enough with this. I mean, I think she had clued him in to this a bit. And he told me what the boundaries were. And I went, okay, that's fine with me. And how are you going to keep yourself from going beyond that? We had a discussion about that. And that whole thing about 20 minutes. And I was like, okay, I don't think I have anything more to say. How about you? No, sir. So, okay, that's good. Let's go back. So we went back, and you know, it's interesting. When I went back, Mariah was incredibly nervous. So was my wife. But then as they saw things, there was the nervousness lifted, and there was a confidence that came to them. In fact, I started getting texts from my other kids. They're going like, way to go, Dad. Good job. And I didn't think about this in the moment, but what I found afterwards is a message was sent to everyone in the family that Dad's on his game. The dad is still in protector mode. The dad's not passive and still phoning it in. And the whole family got a level of confidence. Man, I'm telling you, people want that in you. Your friends, people you're dating, they want that in you. And as a man, you have to rise up to that. And you've got to engage that. And when you do, guess what? You're going to be weird. You're going to be weird. That's the fourth thing. Men take a minority position, and women or boys always want to be in the majority. I know what I just said right there. I'm hard-pressed to find many guys who have done that. I am in the minority. In fact, I know whenever I talk about sex here at Crossroads, I'm always in the minority, and I'm fine with it. You got to realize, if you're looking for someone to be in the majority, you'll always find it. But gosh, we start talking about sex, it's like, no, I'm sorry, I'm in the minority. Two people who love each other and monogamous, that's not good enough. That's not godly. That's just not. And I'm okay to be in the minority. In fact, in every area of my life, I'm okay to be in the minority. And men, you've got to be okay to be in the minority. Boys financially are always going to have the same habits. They're always going to spend a zero. That's what boys do. As a man, you realize, no, the resources that God's blessing with, this means something about vision. This means something about different values in my life. So you're going to be in the minority about the financial choices that you make. You're going to be in the minority about, I may just go on and on and on and on. And this has to be okay with you, or you're a boy. Because boys have always got to be in the majority. When I used to do student ministry and try to get kids to go to camp, what do boys always say? I ask, hey, you going to go to camp? Well, who's going? Who's going? Like, if everyone's going, then I'm going. And if other people aren't going, then what? I'm not going. Boys can't stand out. They've always got to feel like they're in a safe majority of numbers. Genesis 7:1 puts it this way. Then the Lord said to Noah, go into the ark, you and your household, for I've seen that you are righteous before me in this generation. You are righteous before me. And not everyone's righteous. You are in the minority, and you are righteous before me in the entire generation. Norman Mailer, by the way, you can be a man and be an atheist. There's atheist men and there are Christian boys. It doesn't matter what you believe spiritually. It doesn't matter what you make economically. It doesn't matter what you do for a living. These are the values. And I think Norman Mailer had some stuff to say about masculinity. He says this, masculinity is not something given to you, but something you gain. And you gain it by winning small battles with honor. Fifth and final mark, and we're going to look at these in deeper dive in the weeks ahead. The fifth one is, a man works for the team, and a boy plays for the MVP. Boys want to be the most valuable player. They want to be the quarterback. They want the ball. And you know, when they don't get their way, they take their ball and go home. But men know that no matter how manly or sufficient or strong we may be, we're not strong enough, and we need other people. We need women in our life, we need men in our life, we need whatever. We need to operate in a team context. And God models this so well for us because the Bible refers to him as the triune God. There is this very controversial thing called the Trinity, and it's hard to understand. God is one, yet in three persons, and yet we see something about God that God operates in the context of team. God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit have different roles. They have different roles, and they're all necessary, and they interplay off of one another. And a man has to come to embrace that he isn't self-sufficient on our own. Men, we're not self-sufficient on our own. We need other people to be in our world. And again, we have so many things in our world that are keeping us from being healthy team players. By the time a boy is 21, a man is 21, he's played 10,000 hours of video games. 10,000 hours. Not anti-video game at all. But I'll tell you, if you're going to have that volume of video game in your life, you just have to recognize you're practicing isolation. You're not practicing being a teammate. You're practicing just being in your own world. You can be an introvert and be a man. You can be an extrovert and be a man. But you cannot be an isolationist and be a man. You have to depend on other people. And video games train us. It's getting that masturbatory masculinity. They train us, if we're not careful, to just be by ourselves and go in our own little internal world. The average boy or male, I'm talking physiologically now, by the time he's 18, he's averaging 50 porn movies a week, watching 50 porn clips a week. Now, I don't want to get into right now the morality or immorality of porn. That's a different topic. Just to say this. Man, if we're having 50 solo sexual experiences every week, we're training ourselves to make sex a solo sport. Sex is not a solo sport. It's a long-term thing. And if you're training yourself to please yourself on your own without an actual woman there, you're going to create problems in the hopeful future marriage team that you might have. You just need to recognize this is not about your personal pleasure right now or can I not. Do you want to prepare yourself to be a man or do you want to keep doing what boys do? And it's going to be a hard thing to try to do something different, but it's a journey that you should willfully enter into because you have a vision and you're working to something that other boys just don't understand, who are just trying to think through, well, I'm just wanting to, I feel it, why not? Well, God didn't say you can't do porn. Boys always have reasons to do whatever they want one day at a time because they're all about their play and themselves. Men, we're different. We're different. We do things in a different way. And Noah, I don't know if the director thought about doing this. It's brilliant. Actually kind of cool that an atheist did the movie. Maybe he saw things or thought things that I wouldn't have. Again, a lot of them are just wrong, but I appreciate the movie. One of the things he did was maybe he accidentally did this, but he had two manly-looking men. One of them was obviously Noah, and the other one was the nemesis, who was Tubal-Cain, total opposite. And Tubal-Cain, at one point in the movie, says this, "We are abandoned, orphan children, cursed, damned to live by the sweat of our brow, damned if I don't take what I want." This is what a boy says. Brilliant. It's exactly what a boy is. I'm on my own, sweat on my brow, don't like work, gonna take what I want. I'm a predator. Total boy. Looks like a man, talks like a man, he's a boy. Noah, on the other hand, one of his more manly lines of the movie says to one of his sons, he said, "I'm asking you to be a man and do what needs to be done. Do what needs to be done." And in these five areas, I'm hoping we're going to see things that need to be done. Genesis 7:5 says that, "And Noah did all that the Lord commanded him." He did what needed to be done. One last one. 1 Corinthians chapter 13 says, "When I was a child, I spoke like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. And when I became a man, I gave up childish ways. Or when I was a boy, I spoke like a boy, I thought like a boy, I reasoned like a boy. When I became a man, I gave up boyish ways." This is not about saying right now, we've screwed up, we've been bad, it's about saying right now, guys, do we want to give up boyish ways? Right now, do we want to become a man and start walking in the minority of the greats who've gone before us? Or do we want to keep having groupthink, keep taking the path of easiest resistance? And I'm here to say, no, we don't want that. We want to be men. We want to go a new path. We're going to help us get there this series. God, thank you so much for the amazing men that you brought at Crossroads, for the amazing friends, and that you are also creating more. You are doing more. And I thank you that's something you've called our community to. And I'm actually thankful, just to include the women for a minute, that the women embrace that here. That they're able to see that men are difficult to develop and are comfortable being in a context where the language of masculinity is talked about to reach and develop men. So thank you for this community and take us to new places. I pray these things in your name. Amen.